Today is September 28th, and this is the second Dharma talk in our 8-week practice period. We began our practice period yesterday with a day of mindfulness, and we're taking up the topic during the practice period of the first teachings of the Buddha. Really the very first Dharma talk. And we'll be spending 8 weeks looking at that topic. And not only will we be sort of looking at the topic, hearing Dharma talks, and there'll be reading assignments, and in two books, Thich Nhat Hanh's book, The Heart of the Buddha's Teaching, and in Walpole Rahula's book, What the Buddha Taught. And I will be having weekly sheets where we have, you know, what we're reading, topics for discussion, also some particular practice commitments that we make during the practice period together. So at the end of this evening, we'll pass these out for the next beginning couple of weeks. And I didn't quite make enough copies, so maybe my students, if you don't take them, I'll email them to you tomorrow. We've got a new recording device because the Dharma Talks will be on the web at mountainlamp.org. So if you want to listen to them again, they'll be available. And as I mentioned yesterday, there are a number of sanghas around North America that are joining us in this practice period. And we'll be doing the same practice that we are, same study, same practice commitments. So we have a very large container of friends who are practicing with us together in this 8 weeks, which is really wonderful. To feel that level of support. And also the particular commitments and study that we'll be doing is also a way to support us in practice. Sometimes when there's a structure that we're given, it's sort of like, oh, I've got to do this, oh, I've got to do that. And it's amazing how much resistance can come up. And but anything that is offered during the practice period is just offered as a support for you to practice the way the Buddha taught, to realize peace and joy in our daily lives and to manifest it in the world. One of the things that the Buddha was very adamant about from the very beginning of his teaching to really the last breath of his life was that it is important for us to practice for ourselves. It is important for us to find our own light within. Teachings come to us from outside of ourselves. But if we take those teachings and then we apply them and do the practice as prescribed, then it is a way for us to discover our own innate light, our own innate, we could say Buddha nature or essential nature, something that is part of all of us. And yet it gets covered over by all the busyness of our lives, all the worries we carry around. And so we take up a practice where we can begin to focus our minds and touch, you know, what is a little bit deeper in our being. So the Buddha said it's really important always to doubt any teachings that come to you from the outside. Doubt can be very helpful. But it can be a hindrance if it prevents us from actually practicing, actually trying. So sometimes the Buddha is called the great medicine king. And he said, what I teach is medicine. And if you take the medicine, then you might get better. And that's the proof of the teachings. But if you hear the teachings and you don't apply them to your life, it's like having medicine prescribed and you don't take it, and of course you're not going to get better. So the Buddha said it's important to question any teaching, but to try it on, to practice it, and see how it lives in your own life. Take it and make it your own. And in that way, find your own light and your own truth. And when we touch deeply enough, we see that the truth we find in our own hearts is a universal truth. So the Buddha taught an eightfold path of practice. And I want to, in the first three talks that I'm giving, over the next three talks I'm giving, look at the foundation of the practice, and that is mindfulness or smriti, concentration, samadhi, and prajna or insight, wisdom. So tonight let's begin by taking up the practice of mindfulness. And the first thing the Buddha taught was how to meditate. And we begin with meditation because in meditation we begin to still our minds. We begin to see the stillness beneath the busyness of our lives. In meditation, it's important that we find a position where our body is comfortable and stable. And then we take up a practice of one-pointed focus. Generally, the first practice we take up is awareness of breathing. Breathing in, we know that we're breathing in. Breathing out, we know that we're breathing out. And we let our awareness rest in our breathing because our breath is a way to bring our body and mind together as one. So much of the time in our daily lives, our minds are busy thinking about the next thing that we have to take care of. And we find that we're always running in the future. And our mind is not with our body. Our mind is somewhere else. And so when we bring our awareness to our breath and we breathe in and we breathe out, we find that our body and our mind are one. And it feels true and it feels real. It feels wonderful. There's a little bit of relief we get from that simple act of breathing in and breathing out and knowing that we are right here in this moment. We're no longer divided within ourselves. When we sit in meditation, we can count our breaths. So when we breathe in, we breathe out. We count our exhalation as one. And we breathe in, we breathe out, we count, our next exhalation is 2. And we can count up to 10 and then start again at 1 if we make it to 10. But it's important to remember that not one number is more important than the other. It's not, we aren't seeking a goal of reaching 10. As soon as we are aware that we've gotten lost, our mind is distracted, we come back to 1. And we're already mindful. So 1 is as important as 10. 2 is as important as 8. And that practice can become kind of dry if it's just like 1, 2, and becomes kind of rote. So when we practice counting our breath, it's like we give our whole lives to it. Because indeed, it is our whole life. The only place we are alive truly is in this moment. We aren't alive in thinking about our projects in the future. And we aren't alive in worrying about what has happened in the past. Our life can only be lived in this present moment. And so bringing ourselves, mind and body together and resting in our breath is a wonderful practice that we take up when we sit on our meditation cushion. And it's important to practice on the meditation cushion because so much of our lives has been lived in distraction that sometimes it's very hard to realize being present in just this moment. It's very hard to realize body and mind together as one. So when we sit and we let our bodies be still, not moving around, not twitching, it's much easier to bring our awareness back and just feel this breath. There was a really important practice that I gave yesterday, and it was the practice of breathing the green earth. Because indeed, every breath we take is breathing the green earth. We have our breath only because trees, grasses, algae, leaves are breathing. And in every breath we take, we breathe in the trees, the grasses, the shrubs. And every breath we exhale, we give back to them. And when we breathe in this way, we begin to dissolve some of this concept we have of being completely separate. And we can begin to touch a little bit the meditation on interdependence. Very important practice. And so one of the commitments we make in our practice period is to sit 20 minutes each morning. And when we sit on the cushion each morning, and we breathe in and we breathe out, we can practice this joyous practice of breathing the breath of the green earth. How wonderful it is. How much freedom and joy there is to be breathing with the trees, with the old growth, with the alders, to be breathing with the grasses, to be breathing with the wind and the oceans. And when we breathe like this, then our counting never becomes dry or lifeless. It's filled with the whole life of the earth. So I ask you during our 8-week practice period to spend 20 minutes each day sitting and breathing in this way. I think you'll find it very wonderful. Thank you. So the first practice in the practice of mindfulness is the practice of stopping. And it's stopping so that we can arrive. It's not stopping to cut something off or push something away, but it's stopping to arrive at our life as it's manifesting right now in this moment. And when we breathe in and we breathe out, and we touch the wonder of breathing in the earth, breathing in the green earth, we find that without any effort at all, our body starts to become more calm and our mind more peaceful. We already are beginning to touch a little bit more about our true home. And in that touching of that calming, we soften. It's not so much that we're separate and we're having to defend this separate entity anymore, but we begin to touch in reality how we are part of the life of the earth. And the life of the earth is always giving itself to us, supporting us. And it feels so wonderful to know that, to let go just a little bit of the ideas of our separate, of being separate, and touching in instead to how we're connected. So the first practice is stopping and arriving at this moment. The second is calming and softening whatever is there. And the third is just resting, resting in our body. And we find when we're softening and we're resting in our body that if we open our eyes are soft. And we can look with the eyes of the Buddha, with the eyes of love. This is a practice where we begin to touch really much more deeply into the truth of our existence. And yet without stopping and arriving, calming, softening, resting, doesn't happen. So our first step is always to stop, to arrive in this moment. When we've been practicing this as a practice on our cushion in sitting meditation, it's like our heart begins to know the way home to what's right here. When we're sitting on a cushion, we don't cut anything off. We include all things. So the distant train, we hear the distant train. The presence of our community, we are aware of the presence of our community, of each other. Our practice is one of stopping and arriving so we can include all things, nothing cut off, particularly ourselves. The next step in our practice then is to begin to carry this into our daily lives. So to go from meditation on the cushion to mindfulness, the practice of mindfulness wherever we go. And mindfulness is remembering to come back and to be here in this moment. So simple. But it helps, again, just like with sitting meditation, to have a place where we focus our attention, just one point. So when we're walking, it's really helpful to feel our feet touching the earth. Feel the soles of our feet touching the earth. And we're not busy thinking about where we're going, or how we're going to get there, or what we're going to do when we arrive. We just let our feet touch the earth. And it's easiest to practice this when we're in a beautiful place. And so part of our practice commitment is to, for an hour each week, to go into nature. To go to a place where we are filled with the beauty of the world. And to practice walking meditation there. And it's easy to practice when we're in a beautiful place, because our senses are filled with the sights, the flowers blooming, of leaves turning and falling. We feel the soft earth beneath our feet. We feel the cold breezes of fall, of autumn. And our mind isn't busy thinking about anything else. We are completely present with what is unfolding right in that moment. And when we touch the earth that way, it's such a gift. We are filled with the beauty. And when we are filled with the beauty of the earth, we know that's no other than our own beauty, because we are of the earth. There's no way we can be separate. Our breath, our clothing, our food, water, each other. Even things that we consider man-made are of the earth. The gas in our cars is plants that lived millions of years ago. The cement comes from the earth. The floor we walk on comes from the earth. Everything that we have, everything that we are, has been given. And we are part of that giving. And the best practice we can do is to be open to receive it. So that when we sit at a table and we eat our supper, we know that that has been a gift offered to for our protection, for our life. And we are just taking the earth in many different forms and transforming it into ourselves, into human. And we are part of that whole circle. It's like when we take milk, and milk can be made into yogurt, or it can be made into ricotta cheese, or it can be kefir, cottage cheese. But we know it's all from the same source. It's all from milk. And if we look into that milk, we can see that the cows are there, and the grass is there, and the sunlight and the rain, And so our practice of stopping, arriving, calming, and looking with the eyes of the Buddha are to look into everything that is given and see how it is truly just part of us and we are part of it. And this is very much looking with the eyes of the Buddha. And that is the practice of mindfulness. It's mindfulness is sometimes translated as remembering. And on one hand, when we bring our mind and body together as one with our breath, that's a kind of remembering. But I'm talking about an even bigger remembering. And that is remembering when we take a step on an oak floor. That an oak tree lived for hundreds of years. And we are touching that. Beyond space, beyond time, we are touching that life. And that life is supporting us. In everything we touch, everything we see, everything we do, we look with the eyes of the Buddha. And see the profound interconnectedness. Our teacher calls it interbeing. And the practice of mindfulness is something that is important to practice all day long. Not just when we're sitting on the meditation cushion, but in everything we do. So whether we are walking, standing, eating, even lying down, we can still come back and enjoy the breath of the green earth. So from this practice of meditation and mindfulness, there are seven miracles. The first miracle is our ability to be present, to be in this moment. And when we are truly in this moment, we're able to recognize the other. Like I said, when we're really present, we include all things. And yet, it is with one pointed focus, one pointed mind, so that when we are looking at a flower, we include the flower. And when we include the flower, we are nourished by the flower. How beautiful it is. How wonderful that this fragrance, this form, this color exists. This recognizing of the other is the meditation on interdependence, on interbeing. And when we are practicing like that, we are nourishing ourselves with the object of our attention, and we're also nourishing the object of our attention with our mindfulness. And we see there's not so much separation. And when we are able to be completely present, we see that whenever there is suffering, the presence relieves the suffering of the other. And when I say the other can be something that's inside of ourselves that we've somehow cut off, that we don't want to see, we don't want to acknowledge. But it can also be the suffering that we see in the world. And when we are really present, then we can relieve the suffering of the other. This morning I went into a store and there was a young homeless woman sitting outside the store, and she had a sign, you know, homeless, please help. And as I went in, she said, will you buy me some hot chocolate? And I thought, no, I don't want to buy hot chocolate. But as I was going around the store, there was a protein drink, and I thought, oh, I need a protein drink today. So I picked up two protein drinks, and after I bought them and I went out of the store, I said, which one would you like, one of these? Which one of these would you like? And she smiled, she said, I'll take the mango. There was a connection that was formed between us, and it was a connection of compassion. And I wouldn't say that I was being compassionate. I was saying compassion arose, and it was there between us, and it held us there together as one. And both of our hearts were lightened. When we are able to truly be there, then the suffering of the other is relieved. And when we've touched that relief, then it's very easy to continue to shine that light of mindfulness on the suffering. And we begin to see, you know, in practicing like this, that, you know, a lot of our ideas of in and out, of self and other, they fall away. When we say the other, it makes no difference whether the suffering is inside of ourselves or outside of ourselves. It becomes completely immaterial. It's just suffering. And we can be there. And our presence and the light of mindfulness is healing. And when we shine that light of mindfulness, then we begin to understand the suffering. And understand it in a way that it can transform. And that is out of that transformation that the deep healing, the medicine of the Buddha, is realized. I have a friend who told me that a couple of times in the past year he's awoken in the middle of the night from a dream, and in both circumstances they were dreams of suffering. One was a great sadness. He he was feeling over the loss of somebody he loved very much. And he said in the dream, he felt this deep level of acceptance of the sadness. And in that deep level of acceptance, it was okay. I read a story recently of a young monk who was always very happy, and sometimes when he would think about his family that he was far away from, that he wasn't able to go see, he would feel sad, and he'd say, "Just sadness, no problem." There's, in our practice, a place where there's a deep level of acceptance of things just as they are. Because the suffering also is not separate from, it is also part of the healing. I'll talk about this at length when we take up the Four Noble Truths. But I think it's important to touch that whatever the suffering is we encounter, there is no rejection of it. We can be there. And in that act of saying, "I can be here," compassion arises. And that compassion is healing. And it's from that place that we know how to step forward. We know what to do. It's from that place that action arises. So the seven miracles of mindfulness are to be present, to recognize what we consider as the other, to nourish that object of our attention with our attention, and to be nourished in that way also. And by that, to relieve the suffering. To shine the light of mindfulness on ourselves and the other, so that understanding is present and transformation can happen. Within each of us, there are patterns of thinking that have been established from a long time ago, and they tend to be things that we believe in as being true. They're things we identify with, and they're things that we create identity with or through. There are certain habit energies of our minds. And when we're being mindful, we start to be able to see what our thinking is about things. It can be something as simple as, you know, we see a young homeless person and the thought is, "Well, they should be out working." Right in that thought, we create an other. We create a self and we create another. It might be a thought of we're something we're doing at work, and feels like we're doing it wrong, and we think, you know, I can never do anything right. And if we start paying attention to what our mind is doing, and it means we have to stop first, because our mind just runs on all the time, and if we haven't touched that place of stopping, we don't know where our mind is running. And so we come back to the present moment over and over again to see what's coming up. And on one hand, we see that things are ephemeral. Things, you know, thoughts arise and then they leave us. But as we continue to pay attention, we start to see that there might be certain habits of our mind, certain habit energies. And, you know, the first thing is to think of that as something other. It's like, oh, I don't want that to be, you know, that's something bad. But this practice of mindfulness then is to accept that, which is immediately to begin to relieve the suffering. And say, oh, there's my fear. Oh, there's my self-deprecation. Oh, there's my anger. And we can do like the monk had said, oh, just fear, no problem. Oh, just anger, no problem. And that begins to shine the light of mindfulness on what we consider as other. The parts of ourselves we don't want to look at, we don't want to accept. The parts of the world, the things that are happening in the world that we don't want to accept. And initially, we just begin to welcome that a little bit, open to it a little bit. And as we open to it a little bit, that's shining the light of mindfulness on it. And whenever it comes up, we shine the light of mindfulness on it. Ah, there it is. There is my old friend, my fear. Oh, there it is. There is my old friend, my anger. And we breathe with it. Just like on our cushion, when we come back and we breathe with the green earth, we know that when there is suffering, we can breathe with it too. We can come back and breathe. And it helps very much at that point to smile also. Deep acceptance. It is okay. Whatever we find, it is okay. And that's not to be sort of glib and say, oh yeah, everything's okay, it's all one. It's much more direct than that. We are accepting this out of the heart of compassion. We are accepting exactly who we are out of the heart of compassion. We are accepting the homeless person exactly as they are out of the heart of compassion. Because we've been practicing looking with the eyes of interbeing, we know that we're not separate from any of it. And in being able to embrace and hold it in that way, it is transformed. And bit by bit, understanding arises. And that understanding is the deepest understanding of the spiritual life. That what holds everything together in interbeing is love. And that is where the healing is. And that is where the action arises from. So those are the seven miracles of mindfulness. And by stopping and truly arriving, by calming and softening, by resting and looking with the eyes of interbeing, the eyes of the Buddha, we bit by bit begin to realize that we have never been separate from this Buddha nature. That it is the true nature of you and of me and of grasses and of trees, of water. And we have a place to stand free in the midst of that. Deep acceptance. Unless we can accept things exactly as they are, there's no possibility for action. So we practice like this all day long. We practice coming back and stopping so we know exactly where we're at. And we practice stopping to breathe in the breath of the green earth so that we have the strength, the support of the green earth in being able to look with the eyes of compassion. So the commitments that and the study that we will do together in the next 8 weeks is just to support us all to be able to live in this way, to live in mindfulness and to bring mindfulness into everything we do. And when it seems hard, we only have to remember that we have the support of our Sangha, of each other, and the support of the beauty in the world. In order to embrace and transform the other, so that we truly see that there is no self, no other. Well, it's time to stop now. And, I'm sorry, I didn't leave enough time for questions. I'll try to do that next time I'm here. We have an introduction here to the practice period and assignments for week one and week two. And next week there'll be another handout. And so bit by bit we'll sort of put this practice period together. I hope we can all make the commitment to be here each week, because one of the wonderful things of practicing together is maybe we can just wait till I finish to pass this out. One of the wonderful things of being practicing together is that every time we come here and see each other, you know, we know we've all been here together all week in the same heart, in the same practice. And it gives a lot of strength to do this, to know that you know, there's a whole community here with us. And it's very easy then to feel a deep connection with each other. I know so often in our lives we feel that the way we connect with each other is by talking a lot, you know, or doing something together. And truly, those we do connect that way. But there's something other way we connect in practice that is deeper than that. When we are sitting together in stillness and supporting each other to come back, and we are breathing together, there's an incredible sense of interconnectedness there that is the foundation of love. And we find that even if we aren't talking a lot with each other, we still feel a very deep sense of appreciation, support, and love for each other. Yeah, it's very wonderful. So, coming together every week, and being together, and practicing together for 8 weeks, I think we'll all experience a little transformation. So thank you very much.